Blog Talk Radio.
Hey,
what's going on, bro?
You tell me, it's your world. It's all about you.
No, not yet. If I hit the lotto,
not
that
yet.
Might be a different story, bro. But,
you gonna hit the lotto? When you gonna hit the lotto?
Man, listen, that'll be so nice.
I know that would be so
be
nice.
A beautiful thing.
I got a coworker, a buddy of mine at one of the places I work at, grades test papers, and he's actually one of the security guards. And he swears up to me that if he ever wins a lotto, he's going to help me set up a recording and film studio.
Nice. That's
going to
be
all
right,
yet,
then.
He ain't won the lottery yet, but he assures me that if he hits it, I'm on his list of people to give money to. So every time I see him, I said, if he hit it, I'm home. And he always says, don't worry, I got you.
Hey, that's a good thing, man.
I'm just holding them to it. I'm like, just go ahead and win that lottery so we can find ourselves an empty building somewhere in the Triangle area of North Carolina and turn it into a mega studio.
Ain't nothing wrong with that, bro.
That's a beautiful thing. Oh, it is a beautiful thing. Well, you know, we got a couple of guests coming up. Well, I got a couple that might be coming today. I'm hoping that a filmmaker buddy of mine is going to call, as well as a reverend. But I don't know if you checked out from time, but we got a business leader that's going to be calling us on the 8th of May to talk about the business world. And she has found us. Are you ready for this? She has found
What's
us
that?
An astrologer. She has found us an astrologer. We're going to be talking astrology on May
15th. We're going to be talking astrology, bruh.
On May 15th, we're going to be talking astrology. She has found herself some young lady out of Vegas that is all into astrology, and she's going to tell us what the stars have got in line for us.
Okay. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
We got an astrologer coming our way on the 15th, and like I said, a business book author on the 8th. So most of those are in route. I've already created those shows, so folks are in for some enlightening conversation in the early part of May. And
nice.
Lovely lady, Miss Ty. She has lined those people up, so I know she'll be there for those conversations, and I'm hoping
she better be
this.
There, or else we could give her a free read.
Give her a free reading? Is the reading might not be
possible? Give her a free reading.
Now, is it gonna be the
she
reading
might
for
not
the
like
her.
Bro, we might not be able to read like they read.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
That is very true. So I was checking out the paper today, and you know that the Saturday is going to be a milestone day for Mr. Trump and for the rest of us that put up with this insanity. That will be
100 days.
100 days.
100 days, 100 F-ups. How about that?
Yeah.
Give it up for the Trump master.
The Trump master. As a matter of fact, I was looking at USA Today, and the news analysis lady said that so far the courts have blocked the signature immigration ban. Congress has balked at delivering his promise to repeal the Affordable Care Act. The FBI is investigating Russian meddling in the election, an issue that forced the resignation of his national security advisor, and is likely to cast a shadow over the administration for months or more. The Republic has given him record low approval ratings for a new president.
Sound like Buddy doing real bad right now.
But you know, Trump ain't gonna be
Damn,
Trump without
Donald.
You know, Donald's gonna come up with some way to spin it. So Donald's already come up with a way to spin it. He is holding, in Trump fashion, he is holding rallies.
Well, you know, that's what he does.
Yeah.
That's his thing. Hold a rally, tell a lie, you know, and hope people fall for the hype.
Fall for the
okey-doke? Oh, yeah, they fall for the okey-doke quick, too. And then you're going to have some idiot, probably black, too, some idiot going to be on TV talk about, I believe in Donald Trump. You might be believing in getting your ass whipped.
It says that, well, first he complained, as he always does in an early morning tweet, and it says a few days earlier he broke to a friendly audience at a manufacturing plant in Kenosha, Wisconsin, that no administration, quote, no administration has accomplished more in the first 90 days, and he has announced a big rally and they put big in capital letters, next Saturday in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Dude, your boy smoking rocks, man. I don't know what's wrong with that dude, man, but hey, you know what? Somebody going to get him, watch.
Oh, somebody going to get him. Well, the historian's already on. It says, presidential historian and White House veteran say Trump has had one of the least productive first 100 days in office of any modern president, and there's little dispute that he has had the most tumultuous one.
Oh, yeah. He going to mess around and get jumped. Your boy Kim Jong-un said, what you want, nigga? He going to be messing around and going to get his head cut off. That'll get a billion views on YouTube.
Is that what he's going to happen? He's going to get a billion views on YouTube?
He's going to get a billion views on YouTube with a head cut off.
I don't
know. I'm just
saying.
Folks
going to be like, what happened to him? He got a billion views on YouTube.
Got a damn head cut off.
Mess with the wrong people. Speaking of folks getting their heads cut off, were you surprised that the Facebook Live guy said, "Nah, I ain't trying to get caught. I'm just gonna take myself out."
You know what? I guess. See, I'm an asshole. I said he wasn't mentally ill. He did that trying to get that girl to get back with him, and figure if I do something so drastic, she's gonna beg me to get back with her. And then he just, you know, killed the gentleman, ain't had nothing to do with nothing, went on a run. That nigga killed himself because they ain't had no sauce for them fries. I mean, for them nuggets.
is that what it was?
The guilt caught up with him for what he did. As it does, I never killed nobody, but, you know, working in the industry in which I work, man, dude said, it's times they can't sleep at night. The guilt catches up with them. And he knew.
Caught up with
them. Yeah, he knew that his firepower was nowhere a tenth of the size of law enforcement. And they've been looking for him, too. Now, a lot of people say, well, why they ain't catching this? Why they ain't catching that? You got to figure, if he had killed someone else of a different hue, man, he wouldn't have even been able to end that Facebook session. They would have got him. But when you're talking about us, it's no big rush. He only killed, like, you know, from their point of view, I'm assuming, they like, well, he only killed a black man. For us, it's like, how could you kill one of our elders? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I look at my father when I saw that gentleman. They around the same age. And I'm like, this Negro running out here killing folk because he got a gambling addiction, a drug problem, and his lady said, you know what? I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. And so you want to take somebody out? I mean, you should have done yourself, her, and everybody that you bothered a favor and took your stuff. You should have done that first.
Should have done that totally first. But yeah, he didn't go out that way. But my question for you is, you know, there's been some speculation. You were teasing the McDonald's workers, I think it was McDonald's, about stalling them. Now, there's some folks that are saying that they should get them reward money because they sat there and apparently they recognized who it was and they said, hey, maybe we won't give them his fries and we'll come up with some other excuse. What do you
think?
They
stalled them? If they indeed stalled them in order for law enforcement to get up to them, then yes, they should get that money. Because
yes,
they could have just served him like everybody else and let him go on his way and then called and say, hey, yo, he was just here. Well, where'd he go?
Right.
Well, we really can't see from the window, but after they pull off, we don't really know where they went to. And they would have still been looking
anywhere.
For them. Right.
Yep.
They would have still been looking for them. So if they stalled them for law enforcement to catch up with them and then it ended how it ended, then yes.
Yeah.
They deserve every dollar of that money, and it's up to them on how they split it or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, yeah. Hey, man, if we were working in the McDonald's and that Negro would have rolled up on us, I'd have been like, yo, mom, tell nigga we ain't got no fries, yo. I'd have started an argument with him, man. I'd be like, sir, do you want hot fries or do you want cold fries? Make up your damn mind, because I give you some cold fries right now. And we got to drop nuggets.
Because these fries that you looking at, these fries are 12 hours old.
Yeah, these fries been up here all damn day. You want these hard motherfuckers? I give them to you. You know, he going to be like, hell no, I don't want no cold fry. Now, that's kryptonite to a black man. Give him some cold french fries. Hey, man.
He
turned into somebody that's not big.
We do not like some cold fries.
Hell no. And I don't care how gangster you are. If a mom give you some cold fries, you either going to start complaining or tear the place up. Because you could be so hot. That somebody gave you, because that's the first thing you notice when you go to a restaurant, when people get their food, what's the first thing they grab? Some fries. Like, when their plate, when the stuff's served to them, they ain't even pushed the tray over. Fingers all in the fries.
All in the fries. Want to make sure those fries are hot, because, you know, the burger can be whatever, but the fries got to be hot.
Hey, man, the burger for me got to be hot, too, because I don't know how long that joint been laying out there.
Yeah, it should be hot, but I'm just saying. You're right. I'm just saying, but the average person, he checks the fries first.
Oh, yeah. Everybody touched the fries first. Even, you know, even if you hungry as hell, man, you want to dig into that. He went to McDonald's. You want to dig into that Big Mac or that quarter pound with cheese, you still going to put a couple of fries in your mouth before you even unwrap that joint. Now, you might eat the burger whole if you're really hungry. But
yeah.
You ate a quarter of the fries before you dug into the burger.
A quarter.
So imagine digging your hand into some cold-ass fries. Boy, that is not a good day.
That's not a good day at all.
That would be a horrible day, man.
Horrible day. What
but
you going to do about that?
Unfortunately, you know, they say we can't choose when we go or how we go. Unfortunately, for the gentleman, I cannot call his name right now, but
yeah,
you know, he had just left his family, and you never expect anybody to bring harm, especially on our elders, man, because they've been through some stuff. He went through the whole civil rights movement, being treated less than.
Like I said, water hoses and all.
Yeah, water hoses, dogs, people spitting on you, people calling you nigger, people doing everything imaginable to be killed by one of your own. Wow.
But you know,
sometimes
black
folks
got to
think, man.
Sometimes we don't think, and we try to find the easiest phrases out there, and that's not the way to go. You got to think about the respect that you're supposed to have for the elderly. I mean, that's one of the things that Chuck Davis, who runs the African-American Dance Ensemble, that's one of the things he preaches all the time when he does a performance, is making sure that folks have respect for the elderly. And that's something that is passed on to even some of his mentees and everything.
Man,
and speaking of his mentees, you're going
to
be real proud. We got a brother here in Durham, North Carolina, who's friends with the Gamla team. He's friends with Ninth Wonder, and he's friends with all that. He's a young brother in his early 30s in the whole rap game industry, but he's also an activist and things of that nature by the name of Pierce Freelon. Pierce Freelon is the son of Theo Freelon, who is the architect, one of the architects who designed the Black Historical Museum in D.C., and Nina Freelon, who's a well-known, nationally known, actually internationally known, jazz singer. So he's the son of those particular people. Pierce is part of a youth movement that is running. He is running for mayor of Durham. Actually, we did a campaign event today. So, and that's one of the things he said. He said that some of the people are coming up to him saying, you never held public office. You've done stuff in the community. You've definitely been a community activist, and you've done stuff in the community, but you've never held public office. And, you know, they spit in the word rapper like it's a bad thing. But he is countering them. He's like, look, I'm not talking this gangster rap or any of this really negative rap. I'm actually doing some positive rap, and I've actually... You got an organization called Blackface that is teaching young kids, even younger than him, like teenagers and young adults, how to do videos and rap and really mold their folk poetry game into a real positive thing. So he is one of our three candidates as of now. You know, Mike Lawson, but he's one of the three candidates for mayor. Like I said, he's definitely got he's got a good shot because he's definitely got the youth vote behind him. So I went to his campaign thing and saw a lot of prominent people that were out there supporting him. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But he is getting a little bit of flack because he is a musician and a rapper, and his mom was a musician too. But
well, you know what? And people got to remember, it ain't about what you do to earn your dollars. It's about what you do to help the community. We got people of all industries, trades, and professions and various organizations. You can't say, oh, you're a rapper. Okay, well, you know what? Actually, he might say otherwise. He might tell you he's an MC if he's hip-hop, you know. But before you even go into that argument, it's like you try to discount, and that's what's hard to digest about us sometimes. You know, you want to discount this man, so you say, oh, he's a rapper. In other words, don't pay him no mind because he don't know what he's talking about. Meanwhile, he's running circles around all of these nice bourgeois folks that, you know, I have money and I have this and I have that, but you did absolutely nothing to help anybody. And when people ask you, how did you get to where you got, you look down on them. Okay, then, it's time for new blood. Folks been in positions, and I know it's probably the same down there in North Carolina like it is in Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
You got people that's lifelong politicians that have done absolutely nothing. You know what I mean?
Our current mayor has been in office, I believe, for, I want to say, close to 18 years. So it's definitely time for some new blood. I mean, he's been mayor forever, and, I mean, some of the same things have been going on forever. So, like I said, I have nothing against Mayor Bell. He's done some positive things with the growth in downtown. But, like you said, it's time for some new blood and some new energy, and I would definitely agree that he's going to provide that new blood.
Yeah, and you can't get mad because his ideas are more innovative, because the age in which those younger grew up and are growing up in, there's more opportunity. As the years go by, there becomes more opportunity. I would say not direct opportunity in some cases, but there's more opportunity to advance, create, and grow than we had in the 60s and the 70s and even the 80s. When we started coming into the 90s, then computers started coming around, and this technology is just off the chain now, and they have more, they can reach a wider audience, where we were walking around with flyers trying to pass them out and get people to spread the word. They not only have flyers, but they can digitize them and send it to a million people with one click. So, you know, when you come up and you say, hey, I want to do this and I want to do that, some people want things to stay the same. They don't care what technology is out there, what opportunities are out there. They could put out a grant and say, look, the first 100 urban communities that put in for this grant will automatically receive $250,000. Now, mind you, of course, that application is going to be at least 40 pages long. But at the same time, people are going to look at the 40 pages, and they can say, man, fuck that. I ain't filling out all that shit. For $250,000, I fill out yours and mine. You know what I mean? Then I'm going to get $500,000.
It might get my uncles and my aunts too, because it's making a whole million. Because like I said, I might be
If we play it right, we could take one community, we could take two communities, split it into four, fill out four applications, tweak it for each one of the different communities that we'd have broke off into, and get $1 million, and then turn around and consolidate all four after we've done it. Make sure there's nothing in there saying we can't consolidate, and now we have $1 million. You know, and people don't understand this. Sometimes it's thinking, looking at something a different way, but also being open-minded to new ideas and new ways of doing things. If you do what you always done, you're going to get what you always got. And so far, we got headaches.
That's why we got headaches, and I agree with you. And that's actually one of the points that Cicely Mitchell is one of the founders of Art of Cool, which is actually this weekend. It's a big jazz festival.
I know exactly what it is. Some of my good folks from Jamla Records should be down there at the Art of Cool.
Yep. Exactly.
Shout out to Jamla.
Yes, you know, George Clinton's going to be here. Alvin's going to be here. The Al will be here. But that's one of the points Cicely brought up. She was like, look, she has a background in statistics. Not a background in jazz or music, but she was like, look, I had this vision. at the time, the person that she was with, her business partner, and at that time, I think they were more than partners in terms of business. He had a jazz background, but she did not. And she's like, look, I did not have a jazz background, but I now am running one of the largest festivals in the region. I'm a young lady. But, you know, she went in with an attitude of, look, I see this vision, I want this vision, I'm going to go for this vision. And that's the kind of attitude you got to have. I remember that attitude even with my folks. I told this story to you, as Ty, and several others. I remember when I was a teenager, I'm in my 50s now, but I remember when I was a teenager, my folks decided they wanted to start a radio station. Had no background in radio, but they were like, look, they listened to the radio, and they were like, they were jazz heads. They were like, there ain't no jazz on the radio, or no jazz that I can relate to. So I'm going to find out, like you said, about $1 million. I'm going to find out how I'm going to start a radio station. Started it with no college behind them. You know, most jazz stations got colleges behind them, but no college behind them. Just got their community people and started this station that lasted for a little bit over 10 years just off of them learning the job, learning the craft on the job, as they say. You know, like I said, they had to learn the field as they created it. And that's that kind of vision and stuff that I've seen even from some of our new young bloods. And that's why I got mad respect for those that see a vision and see something that they want and are determined to make it happen.
Exactly, man. You got to look beyond your own front doorstep. You know what I'm saying? But sometimes we are our own worst enemy.
Oh, yeah. We find ways to sabotage ourselves, and we find ways, because the other thing that we do, which I'm glad to say that he is not doing, because he got some, like I said, even though he's a young blood, he got some elders behind him, too. Like I said, his parents are behind him, but he's also got Mozella McLaughlin, who's a 100-year-old woman behind him, and some other people that are in the elders, like in the 50 to 80 group, because one thing that he learned a long time ago at the feet of Bob and Chuck Davis and some others is that you got to have innovative ideas, but you also have to understand that you have to respect the ancestors and respect the elders. So he's listening both to the elders, but he's also finding a way to connect his vision. Even in his speech, he was making parallels between his campaign and that of Pauline Murray and Ernie Barnes, who have passed on. But, you know, he's understood that, you know, finding that linear connection between himself and those that have gone on that paves the way for what he's doing.
Exactly.
And that's something else we have to do that we don't do enough of.
And that's very important, because without them elders and ancestors, boy, you ain't going to get too far. You can talk all the crap you want. You can say you want to do this. You can say you want to do that. But if you don't get the grown folk, I call them the seasoned brothers and sisters. If you don't get the seasoned brothers and sisters on board with what you're doing, just go and give it up. Because they ain't trying to hear shit you got to say.
Exactly. You know, I'm a big believer. You know, I might be stepping on some toes here because, you know, not everybody people have different spiritual and religious beliefs, but I'm a big believer in this spiritual concept of the ancestors and what the ancestors following what we do on this planet, even when they've left this planet. So I'm one of those people that actually believes that if you ain't got your stuff together, the ancestors will find a way to make sure that what you think you got planned ain't going to happen. Because the ancestors will be like, they're going to go up to, you know, the powers that be, like God and everybody else, and be like, sorry, we can't approve of this.
Yeah, this shit is not happening right now.
He ain't got his shit together.
and they'll start out, you know, I'm sorry, but he ain't got his shit together, and you want us to do what? Okay.
Yeah. They'd be like, you want us to back this? I don't think
so. Look, they said, we ain't trying to hear none of that shit you talk about. Get the hell on.
Just say, back it off and get ready to get out of here. So, yeah. Hey, back it. Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of gambling, I heard gambling was in the news last week. I meant to tell you that last week. I think it was, it might have been last Sunday or last, but it was fairly recent. I don't think it was this past Sunday. It might have been the Sunday before, but there was a whole article in one of our local papers on Ninth and how he's really teaching these folks at Central and had the backing of the late chancellor of NCCU to create the hip-hop program that he's doing. But he actually had interviews with him as well as with some of the students who have created their own label and signed their own recording artist. So,
yes, sir.
Have created their own record label.
Yes, sir. And he's teaching all over. He just came back from University of Virginia. He was down there for a week, you know, up there to y'all, but he's in Charlottesville teaching down there at Central. He's taught at Harvard. So, you know, big shout to Ninth Wonder, man. Making things happen. He also has the Black Jedi Zulus down there doing the community service and all of that good stuff down your way, you know. So,
he's doing
his thing, man. And then the new Kendrick joint came out. He got some things on there and making heads nod, you know. Just get your neck brace ready. If it's produced by Ninth Wonder, the same way back in the 90s we had Pete Rock, we had DJ Premier, and now we had Jay Dilla, and now we have Ninth Wonder. So it's progression and it's continuing to go on. And right now, you know, I'm proud to be a part of that movement, man. It's something special, especially when you have someone as humble as he is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, like when you first meet people and they have celebrity with them, sometimes that could turn into stank. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, I met this brother 5 years ago when I first started, you know, we first started putting the word of all of the artists, you know, the projects and everything out. And when I met him, you get that feeling like, y'all known each other for years. And that's just how he is. And I was like, you know what? I appreciate it more now. Now I'm really going to be pushing all this stuff out. And I'm going to continue to push this stuff out because every time you see me, it's like your homeboy you went to high school with, but you ain't seen him in a few years. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So big shout out to him and all the artists and all of the beat makers of that comprise the Soul Council. You know, and all of the other individuals that's involved in that movement, man. It's the flag we're carrying, and that's what JAMLA is, man.
Oh, JAMLA's a great flag, and like I said, there's some major stuff that they're putting out there, and like you said, there'll be some JAMLA artists down here for Article, and there'll be some artists from some of the other major labels, so this town's going to be rocking coming this weekend, so we're looking forward to it. They've already sold out a bunch of stuff already, because, you know, George Clinton's going to bring the funk. We know that.
Oh, yeah. George Clinton still getting down all the way from being singing the doo-wop in the barbershop with his group called the Parliaments.
Yep.
And then brought it into having two groups, the Parliaments and Funkadelic, merging them into one and still rocking. And still rocking. So you can't do nothing but salute that too, man. I mean, it's timeless. It's timeless. Even today, on the radio, you know, I can't really listen to my own music like I want to because I'm not trying to use the Jobs internet plan. But on the radio, they had some Luther, they had some Prince, and I was like, yo, these joints are still hot. Like, it's some young dude somewhere right now asking his dad or his uncle or somebody, I want to sing a song to a girl. And he like, yo, sing this. She's not going to know what it is, but her mama will.
You know, it's been just over a year, but it's hard to believe it's been a year since we lost Prince. It was a year ago the 21st.
And they still, like, I don't understand how, you know, how they try to make things seem so bad. Like, Prince, he had drugs in his house. And some people that you live right next door to getting high as gas, but you ain't mad at them. So what's the problem? You know what I mean?
You ain't mad at them. And a lot of the drugs he had, and yeah, he misused them, but a lot of the drugs he had were prescription drugs that his doctor prescribed. It was a matter of from what I understand, the combinations and the way he put them together that is what actually took him out. But a lot of the stuff that he was being prescribed was stuff that you can get from the drugstore, and he was getting them under, I believe, the name of a former bodyguard.
But what's crazy is, I guess because I'm a lot more broken than he was.
That's right.
So I really can't complain about him getting getting nice. You know what I mean? Like, dude had money. Like, he could buy me probably 3 or 4 good times and then about 9 or 10 more times of the spare. You know what I mean? So if that's what he did so he could keep cranking out them hits and making that timeless music, you can go get that album that he made, the first one, 1979, when he had his hair permed out and was butt-ass naked on the cover. And they still rock.
Oh,
we're going
I'm
on almost 40
fan.
Years.
Yeah, I'm still a big fan of When Doves Cry, and that song is way old.
Right. And you figure he was a teenager when he put that out, because in a couple of years, in 2 more years, that first album is going to be 40 years old.
Yep.
So you figure he was, what, 58 when he passed, right?
Yeah, 57
when he passed. So he would have been 59 years old. That man was 19 years old making that kind of music. 19.
Wow.
19. Not 19. 29. 19. He was a teenager when he showed up on the, what was it, American Bandstand or Soul Train. I can't remember which one. And they were asking him questions. He was like, no. Yes. He was a teenager.
Teenager. And still got all that music that we haven't even heard yet. There's still, you know, the studio, your studio in Paisley Park, they're trying to figure out where they, how they're going to release it. I think they put out some stuff last year, and they still got more that they can put out. So, I mean, we could be getting his music for another couple of decades, because he has apparently recorded a whole bunch of stuff that was never released as of yet.
Well, look, when you got a studio in your own house.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and not a, not a little room where you could make a little music and, you know, he had a studio. I mean, I guess the house was the studio. The whole damn thing. You know what I mean? Like, what? The whole thing? The whole thing. So you go in his house, he probably had a concert hall in there so he know how it sound when it's bouncing off the wall. I mean, that's how creative he was. And also a smart business mind that said, hey, y'all, we need to stop giving these record companies control of what we do and what we create. And everybody thought he was crazy when he was writing Slave on the side of his face and like, look, I'm changing my name to the artist it's formerly known as, and it's just going to be this symbol. Because he had to wiggle all of that stuff back to him, his name and all of that. And that's his born-given name, so it's even harder, like, you control his name. No, you don't. This is my real name. Y'all kiss my ass. All right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm still going to make music, but if I do it under this moniker, you get nothing.
Nothing.
Until they broke down and you get your name back. Exactly. And I'm still not messing with y'all. Now I can put stuff out under my name and still make my money. You know, so he started getting artists to follow him, but at first I think everybody probably thought he was nuts. Sometimes people can see things that the rest of us don't pay attention to.
Oh yeah.
And we think that they're crazy when they voice the concern. You know, how you gonna tell Prince he crazy? This man got hits on hits.
I mean, how you gonna tell any artist that they're crazy? I mean, that's part of the nature of being an artist, is to be at least a little bit eccentric.
Right. But he was the first one that made a quote-unquote musical with a real storyline to it. You know what I mean? Purple Rain was a musical. But
that
it wasn't
was
a musical in the sense that it was like, you know, other musicals, they might have a couple of words and then break out a song and dance. This is actually themed. So when you went to the club, all right, you knew the artists were going to perform. You got to see the artist. Not only him, but Morris Day and the Time. You know, Vanity Six. You know, his artists that he had, Wendy and Lisa, when they, you know, I mean, just put all these people on the map, man, and they all hailing from Minnesota. That's like, from where? Minnesota.
And not only that,
we
didn't
know nothing was a bit of snow.
And then he went and got artists that already were established and helped them take them to another level. I mean, he was already established, but he brought it to a whole nother level.
Pete Escovedo's daughter.
That's what it is. Yeah. And Sheena Easton, the Irish chick. She was already established on the rock side.
When she came out with that Sugar Walls, I think everybody listened to that song.
Everybody
liked that song. You know, in fact, you know what? Hey, y'all listening to the voice of the people. It's the six-man Dean Geronimo and co-host Mark Lee. Our host Ty Jones is out right now. But if you want to call in and give us a shout, give us a call at 646-668-8393.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, everybody, yeah,
everybody listened to it. Remember, and then the other groups, Maserati, I'm trying to think. So many, Jesse Johnson, when he left the time. You know,
yep.
It just broke out and it became its own entity. Next thing you know, everybody was trying to rock like that.
Totally trying to rock like that.
Yeah, they some were good at rocking like that, some were not so good. But who started it? You know, so the man was a genius. You know, 32 instruments. He didn't even need a band. All he needed to do was lay each track playing a certain instrument, and when you play it back, you would have sworn a whole orchestra was there.
You would have sworn it was a whole different band, a whole full band.
Right. And they probably like, man, how you going to pay all them artists? He'd be like, what artists? I did every last sound you heard on here.
That's me on keyboard. That's me on guitar.
That's me on the sax. That's me over here on the French horn. I put a little tuba in this joint. Of course I'm getting down on the guitar, you know, and that's me on the clarinet, the flute, you know, and they probably like, what? Yeah, the man was bad.
If you ain't careful, I might even pull out a ukulele on you.
Yeah, pull out anything. Pull a violin on you and get that in, too, and make it sound so beautiful that you like, damn. Man, he got some bad artists. What artists? It's just him.
This was a bad boy.
Yes, he was.
And folks are still, you know, mourning the loss of him. I ran into my former sister-in-law on the 21st because my brother was actually married twice, but this was the first former wife of his, and I ran to her on Friday, and she told me, she said, I'm taking the day off, and I was like, huh? I'm trying to figure out why she's taking the day off. She's like, from this day on, for the rest of my life, I'm taking April 21st off.
Wow.
And she was that deep of a business man. She's like, falls off the third, there is no work on the 21st.
But you know what? There's some people doing the same thing for Michael Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
And that one was really, you know, like, it kind of, I don't know, when Prince went to the hospital, you said they were like, Prince has gone to the hospital, he's not doing well, blah, blah, blah. Man, you didn't hear nothing about Mike except that day he died, they were like, Michael Jackson is dead. They were like, what the hell? I remember being outside cutting grass. My wife came outside. She said, you ain't going to believe this. I said, what? She said, Michael Jackson passed. I was like, no. You know, like, we ain't hear nothing about that on TV.
Nah.
Until he passed, and they was like,
yep, he passed, but they did not. You're right. It's just kind of like it just happened. I'm still not sure about everything that was involved in that one. But you know, speaking of folks passing from the entertainment world, we got to give him mad shout outs because he created a major entertainer in his son. But he was not a bad boy himself, and was a great musician. We got to give mad respect to Mr. Cuba Gooding Sr.
Oh, yeah, from the main ingredient, you know.
Yep.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And some people are probably like, and there are some people that are like, hey, man, wasn't he in the movies? No, that was his son. Oh,
that
for real? Yeah, his daddy was a part of the main ingredient. Yo. You don't understand. You might not be old enough to remember. Yep. So rest in peace to Cuba Gooding Sr. Also rest in peace to Charlie Murphy. You know.
Oh yeah.
Charlie Murphy made the Chappelle Show better. Chappelle Show was already funny. But when he got in there, them true Hollywood stories, when he started talking about Prince and Rick James, and I mean, the brother could tell a story and make you laugh. And the last thing he was on was Black Jesus. I know some people were kind of offended, like, you making a mockery of religion, but Black Jesus is actually a good show. So,
yeah.
You know, Rest in peace to Charlie Murphy. Everybody checking out, man. It's like, damn.
You know, but that's a trip. I was watching, I'll admit it, sometimes I flip on my TV and I watch some of these channels that are geared toward the reruns. So I was watching, I think it was either Kazi TV or Get TV, but it's got like the A-Team on it. And there was an episode of the A-Team that had both Isaac Hayes playing a retired, a musician who was in prison, but it was Isaac Hayes and Rick James coming there to do a concert with them. And I'm sitting myself as I watch the show. I'm like, both of these folks have gone on.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I got a, on my bucket list, I want to go there over to Memphis, man, and hopefully the Stax Records Museum will still be open so I can go over there and check that out. You know, they made a whole bunch of hits in there, man. And,
And don't forget that, speaking of Phil Feline, Pierce's dad, he's actually working on a Motown museum. So there's going to be a museum in Detroit that's going to cover the Motown experience.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, he's teamed up with Barry Gordy, and he's in the process, I believe, of creating that now. So that's going to have the whole Motown experience going on.
Okay. That's something else to see.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's going to
see,
hey,
man.
With. And I still got to get up to D.C. to get to the museum, the new African American museum, because I watched a special on news and that thing is off the chain, it looks like.
I went opening weekend, my wife and I are charter members, and
okay.
It was amazing, man. Like, when you first go in, they tell you when you first get there, you need to go all the way to the bottom, which is like 70 feet underground, right?
Wow.
And it starts back in the 1500s. Doesn't start on this continent. It starts across the water. And then it brings you into, like, and it's dark down there, so you hear the voice, and in different parts you go in, it's talking about, you know, what happened to our people and the major industries that fueled more of the enslavement and all of that stuff. And then you work your way to the second floor, and then the third floor, you come back up, then you can take the escalators up, and there's an interactive floor, which is like the fourth floor, and then the fifth and sixth floors have all of these you know, all of the different things. Marian Anderson's dress, the mothership is in the Black History Museum. Chuck Berry's Cadillac is in the Black History Museum. Like, when you go, you have to go more than once. You can't just go one time, because if you go one time, you're not going to see three quarters of the good stuff. I mean, we've been there maybe like two or three times. I'm supposed to be going down with this group on Sunday. And it's beautiful, man. Like, when you look, and you said, we finally got what had been talked about originally in 1915.
Right.
And then it kind of fell off and nobody said anything about it. And then John Lewis picked that mantle up in the 80s.
Right.
And he's been fighting since the 80s.
To get that thing created.
Until President George H.W. Bush. You know what? We give y'all this money, but you got to do private, you know, fundraising to get the other half. And that's how they came up with the charter memberships and stuff like that. And a lot of us that became charter members, we went on faith, because if you look at how things have gone for us, when it comes to stuff like that, it's like, man, I'm going to go ahead and get this little money I got. I pray to God they open one day. You know, they hadn't even broke ground. And then they started building. And as they started building up, then they're like, "All, you know, we welcome you to the opening weekend of the museum." I didn't go that Saturday because I was like, man, you know, all the famous people are going to be there. It's going to be a train wreck. I said, we go on Sunday. We went Sunday, man. It was so many people. You know, it's like you had to wait, and then you had to squeeze in to see something. But then you got to people walking around you, people bumping into you. It was just so, it was packed like that. But you weren't upset because it's like, you know what, we all trying to get, become more knowledgeable in this thing here. So, all right, cool. And so far, they've already eclipsed 1 million visitors probably a couple of months ago.
Wow.
Like 6 months. So they opened in September, October, November, December, January, February. In March, they eclipsed 1 million members.
Wow.
Or 1 million individuals coming through those doors. And you know, and of course, for anybody who's not familiar, the National Museum of African American History and Culture is the official name of it. It's actually on the National Mall. It may be 100 paces from the Washington Monument. It sits between the Washington Monument and the White House.
All right. Yeah, like
prime
I said, I still gotta get
location, bruh.
That's a prime location. I still got to get up there. But the last time I was up in D.C. was actually, well, I was up there for some comedian friends of mine. They went to a performance like a few years back. But before that, I was up there for the first inauguration of President Obama. And when I was up there for that, I had a chance to go into, I believe, the, I know, I think I went into the Aero, whatever it is, you know, like the airline ones, the airplane museum and all that. So I stuck my head into that for a hot second, and then the one that I really spent some time in, which I was actually impressed with, and I want to get back to that one too, was they actually have a pretty good Native American museum in D.C. as well. So I checked out a little bit of that and was quite impressed with what they had done there. So I definitely want to get back and explore some more of that part of my roots as well, because they sound like they did a good job with that, but that's definitely on that list of things I got to get to at least 3 or 4 times is the Iron Museum. So, like I said, I know one of the primary architects, that's Theo Filon, he's one of the primary architects of that, and I've seen specials on him, and he's talked about it, and he's actually now he has his own battles because he's been diagnosed with ALS disease, and so he's found a foundation to fight that disease and, you know, try to, I think it's called basically a foundation to hopefully have that disease not be with us anymore. So it's a big uphill fight, and he's got an uphill fight himself. But they did a fundraiser for him this past Thursday, and I was unable to make it, but I did tell to friends of mine that went, and they said it was jam-packed, and they bought some dynamic players to help him do that because his wife Nina performed. But in addition to that, they brought both Take Six and Regina Carter. And, you know, Take Six is still rocking and still doing their thing, and Regina Carter is just amazing.
Right. Right. Wow.
They raise a lot of money, and they're still raising money. You know, that was just a fundraising concert, but it's an ongoing fundraising effort, so they'll be doing that continuously. So he was there at his son's mayoral kickoff, so I did get a chance briefly to speak to him, and he's looks like he's in good spirits and good health for right now, but we all know that that's an uphill battle, so. Much prayers and thoughts going out to Phil Freelon, and I hope that that battle is going to go and progress in a positive way. Sounds like he's got some real good doctors on his team that are helping him out. So we're hoping that that battle is won by him, and that's a difficult battle to win. But if anybody can do it, I've got faith that Phil can do that.
Indeed. Keep fighting, brother. We keep praying, and that's what we're
exactly.
going to do on this end, you know. Because it's a terrible thing, and you know, it was once said by Keith Elam, better known as Gifted Unlimited, Rhymes Universal, or Guru from Gangstar. He said, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? It seems that life is just a constant war between good and evil. So as we keep going, we keep fighting, we keep praying, we keep moving on, but we pray that whatever the ailment is will be taken from you by the Most High, and hopefully taken from you and leaving you here in the process, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what we're hoping for. We were talking, I was sitting here reading this other article. You're going to get a kick out of this. But it has a quote in here that I think you're going to find somewhat humorous just because it's called Stating the Obvious. And it's an article talking about the whole concept of surrogates when folks are trying to have children and things of that nature. And, you know, and sometimes based on the nature of the couples, they can't have children. So it says, Dan Neville Rabin, and if I'm mispronouncing their name, sincere apologies, was sitting with his husband at a fertility center and filled out a questionnaire for in vitro fertilization. When it came to this question, what's your reason for infertility? His answer was, stay, said his husband, the old Neville Rabin. Will said Dan's answer summed up just how complicated their situation was. We don't have a uterus. We need to find friends who do. And sitting in a lot of waiting rooms at a lot of IVF clinics, it is a stark reminder that most of the people are there because their journeys have already been harder than ours has been. So, I mean, that's an interesting concept. Of course you can't have, they want to have a baby. They have necessary parts, so they were very forthright about it.
Wow. Ain't that something?
It says Kerry Flammer Powell, founder and director of All Family Surrogacy, said her agency screening process of surrogates who must have given birth before can take up to 4 months. She said the hardest part is getting the surrogate's medical records approved to carry another pregnancy. Also, the agency sent a social worker to the surrogate's home. It takes a lot of time and money, and so many hopes and dreams are invested in this person that they can't, that there can't be any issues whatsoever.
Right.
After surrogates are vetted, they are matched with couples based on whether their personality and expectations are in line with the potential parents. So I'm guessing that you probably are not going to be having a surrogate to a gay couple that's like a fundamentalist religious person, because I'm thinking that they probably would not be going for that.
No, that ain't going to work out too well.
No. They're going to need to have some matching viewpoints.
In fact, that's about to start something that I don't think you want to get into right now.
Yeah, they might not even want to get into that conversation. So I think that we dim real out. So let's see. You do not.
Yeah, you
like
better
those.
Weed them out. They're gonna weed you out. It's gonna be a tough one with that one.
Yeah.
Folks ain't playing. You know, and it's crazy how we can be so. You know, we beat each other down so much.
Oh yeah.
If you gay, be gay. You know what I mean? It is what it is. I ain't gay, so I don't care.
I don't care either, and I'm not either, and I ain't got no problem with them. I've actually got some friends that are gay that have done quite a good job of raising their kids, better than some of my straight friends probably have.
Better than straight folk. But
my
yeah,
whole thing is like, if you're going to be a parent, be a good parent. And I don't care whether you're a straight parent, gay parent, or what kind of parent are you, just long as you're going to be a good parent.
Yeah, just don't be a runaway parent. How about that?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Be a parent that's going to love the children, mold the children, train the children, so that they can grow up and be some good adults. We don't do that.
Yep,
no
that's
more,
it.
Man. We don't know how to do that no more. We so busy complaining about, oh, well, he like guys. Well, hell, I don't. So if that's what float his boat, that's going to make mine sail. It's good. I ain't going to sit there and beat the man up, because it ain't going to change what he likes.
Exactly.
If that's what he likes, then damn it. Leave him alone. But
you know,
as soon as something go down or some shit happen, and you're looking for somebody to help you, he the first person there. Then what you gonna say?
Yep.
What are you really gonna say? No, I don't want your help. Please stop lying. You know, don't lie to me, because you gonna take his help just like you'll take anybody else's help. But we gotta be, as people, I think we gotta be a little swifter, a little smarter. Because sometimes we don't think things all the way through.
And sometimes we let other people dictate what we think. Cause as I'm looking down, I see that down here in another article they were talking about in that same concept, but in another separate article, talking about a Mormon couple that says that they were going through the same concept of trying to figure out how they were going to have their child. And it looks like they eventually went through adoption, but they... the concept of surrogate parents, and One of the things they say is that while Mormons strongly discourage the use of surrogate parents or using eggs or sperm from anyone but the husband or wife, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saint spokesman Eric Hoffman said judgment is ultimately left to the couple. That was Lindy's last chance at carrying a child.
Wow.
Looks like they went, and that did not work, so then they went, it looks like they did the, it says the fertility treatments weren't working, and they wreaked havoc on Lindy's body, and then eventually the couple decided to adopt. So they went the adoption route. And, you know, there's a lot of kids out there that are needing, in need of foster parents and adoptive parents. So if that's something that you're looking for and you're into, you want to have a child and you want to raise a child, do not look over the possibility of either adoption or fostering, because I can tell you that both of those are desperately needed on a regular basis. There are probably lines of folks that are being waited, kids that is, being waited to be adopted, and you know there are plenty of folks out there waiting to be fostered.
Right. And it's a whole lot of kids out there that need it, man.
Oh yeah.
And through no fault of their own in some cases. And in other cases, it may be a little different.
Yep.
But they need homes, and they need strong individuals who are going to help mold them.
Mold and raise
being
them.
Being good people. And that's the biggest thing. Making sure
totally.
They become the best individuals, because this world is getting it's not getting any nicer.
No, it's not getting any nicer, but not getting any nicer, and over here it's getting real rainy. I don't know what it is over there, but I was actually thinking about breaking out and building myself an ark, because we've been having rain for 2 days.
It's been getting down like that, man.
Oh, it rained all day yesterday. It rained all day today, but I was impressed. We have this festival that's another, like, just a regular thing. It's held all over the country. Actually, I think it's held all over the world, called Earth Day. They actually held Earth Day in the rain. I think the organizers were like, look, rain is part of Earth, so let's go ahead and have Earth Day. So the stage was covered. A couple of the musicians did come and perform, including a band that did the New Orleans song, Wade in the Water, or the New Orleans style of that old classic song. And they did some other New Orleans, because it's a Mardi Gras style band, so they rocked the house and did it in the rain, and people out there getting information about conservation and just how to do better with the environment. And not as big a crowd as it probably would have been if it hadn't been raining all day, but they did manage to hold it to rain. They were like, no, we are not stopping this. It's not lightning, and it's just some wash. So they went ahead and had the festival, and I'm sure some other folks did it in the other parts of the rainy southeast as well. So I was very proud of them that they went ahead and held the festival and got the information out to folks.
Exactly. That's it. Get it together and make it happen.
Yeah. Too often we try to find, because I'll never forget, this was years ago. It was a festival that they called because of some rain. It was downtown, and I remember thinking to myself, because I had looked at the weather radar too, and it was like, it's coming. It's going to be a rain shower, but it's only going to last for about 30 minutes. In that particular case, they called the rain shower, and I went to, that time I was living downtown. I went into my apartment, came back out 30 minutes later. They had shut down everything. I think they had cleaned everything off pretty much, and I ran into one or two folks, and I was like, what happened? They were like, yeah, they called it. And I was like, don't they see? It's sunny out there right now. So, you know, sometimes you got to, they're hard choices to make sometimes, but sometimes they're choices you sit there going like, gee, just wait it, just a little bit.
Just a little
Everybody
bit.
Been, just a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes we, just like everything else, sometimes we make hasty judgments.
Mm-hmm. Rushing. Trying to get everything out the way or whatever, and bypassing all the good stuff at the same time.
Yeah.
We're going to learn one day, bro. We're
going to learn one day. Have you been following the NBA?
No, I really haven't. My thing is, I'm waiting for that football, bro.
You waiting for what?
I'm waiting for football season. In fact, arena football has already started. The Philadelphia Soul are 2-0 going into this weekend, and they will be playing
on Saturday.
Okay.
Home opener.
Are you gonna be at the home over there?
Yeah, I'll be there, man. I got my little season tickets and everything. So, you know, they man, it's just nice. The Philadelphia Soul, the winningest team in Philadelphia right now.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy.
Than the
yeah, more so than the Flyers.
Wow.
And, you know, they're doing some good things, man. So arena football holds me until, you know, regular football season. And then, you know, the draft is coming up this weekend.
Right.
So that's going to be
I have been following the basketball because I'm rooting for a certain coach, like I said before, went to school with Doc Rivers, and his road got a little bit harder because he lost Blake Griffin, but they did steal a game from Utah in Utah. So they're all even again. So the next game will be tomorrow, and the best two out of three. So they play tomorrow in L.A., then they go back to Utah, and then they hopefully will close it out in L.A., and then they'll go to the next series. But I did watch a little bit of the Cleveland game, and I can't quite put my hands on Cleveland. So when LeBron's gone, it looks like he's ready to tear up the league and head into a collision course for a rematch with Golden State. But there's something about that team that just seems to be a little off, and I can't quite put my fingers on what it is that might have somebody knock them off before they get to that championship. But I can't quite put my finger on what it is that seems to be slightly off. But there's something about them, even though they're doing their damage, and of course, Washington's doing well. Washington Wizards with Wall, and they've got some other folks who are doing well. Golden State's doing well. So right now I'm thinking that we might be heading to a collision course for the third year in a row, so it might be the rubber match since Golden State got them the first time, and then they got them the second time. So if they go a third time, it would be the rubber match. So, but, you know, it's NBA, San Antonio, and somebody else might decide to derail one of those ships and make it not happen. But I can understand about you having a hometown sport as well, because I did not go, I don't think at all last year, but we don't have any professional football here. We do in Charlotte, and I'm planning to get down. I went a couple of times the year before last. I think it might have been the last time, to a couple of the Panthers games, and I haven't been to a Hornets game in a few years, but this year in the fall, I'm going to try to make a Hornets game, and I definitely want to make it to a couple of the Panthers games when they play down in Charlotte. But here locally, we have minor league baseball, and our team has done well. I mean, they've got a whole movie named after them, Bull Durham, and they've done well and won a couple of championships, not over the last few years. The last few years, under new management, they've had a harder time, but they got off to a good start in the opening, and I did not go to the opening week of games, but I'm going to try to catch a couple of games of the Durham Bulls because nothing else is a good social environment, seeing people, hanging out with people, enjoying the environment, and then, of course, they've got just different things going on, both the game itself as well as just going around the game, little games, little contests and stuff to make it lively. And, of course, there's some good sports bars nearby. So I'm definitely planning to catch one of those one time.
Right. For sure, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I heard a buzz. What was?
Oh, no, that's – I'm trying to link these phones, man, and trying to get all this stuff off of one phone and put it on another phone, and it's making all this daggone noise.
You trying to be a technological wizard?
Well, it's not even that, bro. I had gotten a new phone.
Uh-huh.
But the way they set up the plan was jacked up the way they set it up. So I called them, and then we had some words. And what they ended up having to do is I already had the Galaxy S8. They had to send me two new S8s, and I have to snatch the information off of the devices we just got because they can't just switch us over to the correct plan. So, you know, got to do this stuff, and I've watched them do it before. And I realized that it's not difficult. So I got it done the first time. I just got to do it again. You know what I mean?
I hear you. Well, you know, I have this theory about technology because I have this really bad luck. So if I'm doing well, because I just got a new Verizon phone that's got internet, and that seems to be working well with me so far. And of course, I got my flip phone that I use just because I'm old school that way. But I do have a, I've had a couple of those iPads and iPhones. I am convinced that our computer people put stuff on the phone to make them easier to break, because it seems to me that now I'm always finding a way to accidentally or somehow manage to drop the phone. So I'm convinced that they got, like, flip stuff on the phone that make you drop it at some point. I have no proof of this, but this is my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
But you know what? That's why you got to get that's why I get the OtterBox and put it on there, because God forbid I drop this phone and the screen cracks. Oh, my little feelings gonna be tore up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've had a couple of screens cracked, and you're right. Your feelings are torn up when you look at that cracked screen. You're like, dang, I gotta. And you know, usually when you go to like the phone people, they look at you and they basically tell you, you might as well just buy a new one, because as much money as we're gonna put into fixing it, it's gonna be that much to, for you to get a new one. So that just makes your feelings hurt more so. Now, you know, earlier I was talking about those folks who were dealing with those fertility issues. What I did not realize until I looked at the front of the paper was that this week is apparently, you know, we got a week for everything. Apparently, this is the federally recognized National Infertility Awareness Week.
Really?
That's what it is. It is federally recognized National Infertility Awareness Week. But there's a week for everything.
Wow. They got a week for everything.
So, and one of the questions that they asked in USA Today was, how many states have you visited? Apparently, 48% of Americans have been to 10 states or less in their lifetime.
Really?
Yeah, 48% of Americans have been to 10 states or less in their lifetime. I think I've covered, well, I've definitely gone over 10 states, so I'm above.
Yeah, me too.
I haven't gone
so I'm
out
a part of
yet.
The fortunate 52%, huh?
Yeah, right. Because I have been out west, but I pretty much covered all up and down the East Coast, did a little bit in the Midwest with Wisconsin, Illinois, and Ohio. So that's three right there. Did Kentucky and Tennessee. So that's five right there. New York, New Jersey, that's seven. North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia. That's 10 right there. So, and I'm so Florida. So, yeah, I've already crossed over the 10 mark.
Hey, you ain't even get to the Midwest, and you got to go out at least once, man, to get out there to New Orleans and check Illinois out, and, of course, California, those places right there, man.
Nice. Yeah, I haven't done the West Coast at all. Nice. I haven't done the West Coast yet. That's on my bucket list, to hit the West Coast, because I haven't been to Vegas, haven't been to California, haven't been to where our co-host is from, haven't been to Hawaii or Alaska, haven't been to, I've been to Oregon.
Well, see, I was stupid. My cousin was stationed out there in Hawaii. It's like, listen, man, when y'all want to come out here, man, just let me know. I set it up. All y'all got to do is come. And then, you know, as life goes, and at that time the boy was still small, and it was like, man, all right, we're going to go. Well, he retired now from the military, and he's in Tennessee. So it's like, dang, missed my chance to go to Hawaii.
Blew it.
So
that's why we're
going
to have to blackmail Ty to let us come visit her.
Yeah, we're going to have to set up something like, Ty, listen, what you're going to do, what you will do is allow us to do a show straight from Hawaii.
That's right. We want to do a show live from Hawaii.
Yep. And not just you live. All of us.
All of us. Live from Hawaii. As a matter of fact, we'll even. Hey, we're going to really make this interesting. We're going to make ourselves a national powerhouse. We're going to have the show live from Hawaii at her husband's military base.
Hey.
That don't get some play in the news media. I don't know what will. So, like I said, Blog Talk Radio, live from Hawaii at her from her husband's
military
base.
Military base.
Yes.
Hey, we might be able to make it happen. Go live from there and have a show and have a live audience, man, and it'd be pretty nice.
Live audience, and we want at least one. I figure he's got to have at least some general that he's under the command of, so we want at least one general, or we'll settle for a lieutenant colonel.
Hey, as long as they ain't trying to kick us out, we'll take anybody.
Oh, no, we lost another grade one. I'm sorry, I just had to look at the back of my light section, but apparently, and she was fairly young, too, but looks like Joni Cunningham passed as well.
Oh, yeah, man. Yes, she did.
At the age of 56.
56 years old.
Yep.
Wow.
She was in many people. Joni Cunningham on Happy Days, that was Richie's sister, right?
Richie's sister, if I'm not mistaken, Chachi's girlfriend.
Right, because they had a short-lived spinoff, Joni Loves Chachi.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. Well, I didn't know she was 56. I'm like, I thought they were, all right, you know, when you watch people on TV, you know, all right, that's 12 years older than me, but I would have never thought that. You know, I would have thought should have been like, older, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And apparently she was in the news about 5 years ago in 2011 because apparently the Happy Days supporting cast sued for royalty money.
Wow.
Says in 2012 each won a $65,000 settlement and the right to future royalties.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Ron Howard tweeted, everybody, even the celebrity tweets now. Ron Howard tweeted, "I will always choose to remember you on our show, making scenes better, getting laughs, and lighting up TV screens. Now you will finally have the peace you wanted so badly here on Earth," added co-star Henry Winkler, who played the Fonz. And Scott Baio said, "May people remember Erin for her contagious smile, warm heart, and animal-loving soul. God has you now, Erin."
Mm-hmm.
Definitely had some touching comments, but yeah, she passed away on Saturday. And yeah, you're right. I probably would have been guessing a little bit older than that, but I don't know if you caught me on Facebook, but I was actually posting that I had watched a TV show that I totally forgot about called I think it's The Dark Corner, but it's one of those film noir type movies.
Uh-huh.
And it was actually the starring woman was Lucille Ball. A very young looking Lucille Ball playing the love interest. But
wow.
It was not a comic role at all. It was her doing serious acting.
Okay.
Yeah, I was really impressed checking that out, but yeah, it was. And those film noirs are really interesting. So, you know, that's like those old kind of like gumshoe detective kind of old movies and everything. So that was actually quite an interesting one that I caught, and it was quite interesting. So that was definitely fun to check out. So are you going to go get your flying car?
No, bro. You know what? People have a hard time staying in their own lane on the road, man. I don't know if I want to put it in the air. That's a collision waiting to happen.
Well, apparently, according to this latest article, so here's just how fast technology is accelerating. We haven't even nailed down self-driving cars yet, and the buzz is all about flying cars. So apparently there's some noise being made about having a flying car. Dutch startup Halvi announced last week that it was taking $10,000 deposits for its $400,000 and up two-seated Liberty flying car, while Slovakia-based Acromobile began doing the same for its $1 million plus machine due out in 3 years. Both models would require a runway and a pilot's license. Other big players include Massachusetts-based Terrafuga, whose XFT looks like a car wings folded by its side, and notably can take off and land vertically using so-called DTOL technology. The company claims flying an XFT won't require a full pilot's license. So there's a couple of people out there that, and I should have known, Uber has also got a plan for it. It says ride-hailing giant Uber, whose ambitious push into self-driving cars is entangled in a lawsuit from rival Google, also envisions a world where your Uber ride can skip the downtown gridlock by taking to the sky. On Tuesday, Uber will host an Elevate conference in Dallas on that idea. So it looks like there are some major industry players throughout the world that are trying to make it that you can have a flying car. And they're taking pre-orders.
Nah, I'll pass, man. Let me just stay on the ground, bruh.
You don't have $10,000 that you just want to toss off into the thin air on the possibility that your car might be able to fly?
Hell no.
No, $10,000.
Oh, bruh. Not
no
me.
No, $10.
Huh? Nope.
I thought for sure you had $10,000 that you just wanted to toss out there.
Oh, no. Not at all.
Oh, they got all kinds of interesting business news in today's paper, because they also talk about entrepreneurs that are turning grass into green. And yes, I am talking about grasses in pots.
Wow.
Says you completely lost it now was the reaction of Bess Tabella's husband when she decided to get into the medical marijuana business. But this dynamic businesswoman, a former executive with a Wall Street investment banking firm, illustrates the opportunities and challenges small business owners face when getting into the booming business of marijuana and cannabis-related products. So there are people out there that are making money off of the cannabis industry now, and they're out there creating their own little THC businesses to try to help people out.
Ah, boy. And they still have not... But you know what?
Not only is marijuana, but other cannabis-related products, Tavola launched SBD for Life, a line of skincare, body rubs, foot creams, and other pain relief products made with cannabidiol CBD. Unlike THC, a psychotic drug in marijuana, CBD is considered a non-psychoactive byproduct of the hemp plant. He's making some other products.
And the government still has not repeal those federal laws criminalizing marijuana. So the states are doing all of this stuff. But federal law still trumps state law.
It does, but it says, this is the latest on that, legalization of pot is almost inevitable. Oh, still 57% to 60% believe marijuana should be legalized, but each state legalizes the sale, cultivation, and production of derivatives varies greatly by state. When states strictly limit licenses to just a handful of players, it means small businesses will inevitably be shut out in favor of wealthy, politically connected insiders. As marijuana is legalized, let's make sure that small business owners and entrepreneurs have a chance to fully participate in this industry, is what this person said in like an editorial type article.
Wow.
So apparently,
I say legalize all of it. Some people think I'm crazy.
Hey, I don't.
They did it with alcohol. You know, some people are like, oh, all these people are gonna be getting on drugs. No, they're not. And you're able to tax it. So now you're telling the man want to buy him a bag of weed, that same bag of weed gonna cost you $10.80.
But how far do you want to carry the legalization? Do you want to legalize just the pot, or do you want to are we gonna legalize all the other nonviolent crimes too? So we're gonna legalize, it's legal in parts of Vegas, so we're gonna legalize prostitution too?
Well, you might as well. They doing it. You can tax it, and you can drop the federal debt real quick.
Tax it, drop
you
the federal debt.
Will not have a federal. Look, you can have free education, free post high school, you know, that education will be free for folks. You know, I mean, free health care. Hey, it is what it is.
And just make sure that everybody do like some of these foreign countries have done and regulate the testing part of it as well. So make sure that everybody is tested at least, what, maybe once a week, so at least limit the amount of people that might get, I mean, you're not going to stop all diseases, but you can at least limit it because, you know, I'm thinking as you do that, that if they contract a certain disease, then they're taken off the market.
Right. But you're able to, you know, that's just my thought.
I think you got a good thought there.
Because that would actually get rid of a whole lot of the bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, you really would have free health care. I don't care if they out there getting a freak on for free health, you know, and their tax revenue is funding everybody's health care. That means all the veterans can get decent care. All the disabled can get decent care. Those who have low or no income, it won't be an issue of my tax dollars this, my tax dollars that, because you'll be able to see, you know, and of course, now some of that revenue will be funding the drug treatment, so it actually helps itself.
Absolutely.
You just might as well go ahead, and some people are not going to agree, and they're going to say, well, it's going to make the situation worse and blah, blah, blah. But I say, no, it's actually going to help the situation the same way folks were pissed off about alcohol.
But you might be out of a job then. But you might be out of a job then. Then the prisons are going to shut
down. You know what, though? What I do, the part of my job, what I do is help men and women prepare to leave prison, leave incarceration, and return to their communities. So actually, it'll help what I'm doing as far as my job. If we run out of folks and they got to tell me I got to go, that's cool. We just need to settle out. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm going to take an early retirement. And I'm going to go ahead and settle on out. You know what I mean? But, hey, man, it would be beneficial because this war on drugs has been a fallacy and a farce. Since day one.
Well, I mean, it was based on a fallacy and a farce. It was based on a concept that makes no sense. First off, how many brothers, as I said before, on this show as well as doing other public forums that I've been in, how many folks do you know from the hood actually own the kind of planes that it takes to get stuff from these countries where the drugs are coming from?
Man, like Keith Sweat said, nobody, man.
Which means that the government has to be somewhat complacent in the war on drugs in order to allow it into the area in the first place.
Right. You're right, but you know what? It's just, I don't know, man. For me, it's just kind of weird. When you look at all stuff.
Every once in a while, we'll bust somebody and make a big show of it just so that we can look like we've done something, and then we'll throw him into a country club jail. Case in point, Noriega.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the government was helping him move a whole lot of stuff.
And
but they didn't want you to know that.
Right.
We weren't supposed
a lot of
to know that stuff. Shit, man.
We're not supposed to know
that. Oh, snap. All right. Yes, yes, yes. All right. Well, brother, we're coming to the end of the ride. And, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate y'all listening to us tonight. It's the voice of the people. Again, co-host Mark Lee, the six-man Dean Geronimo. Host Todd Jones is out. But just remember, when you walk out your front door, it's showtime, and the world is your stage. Just make sure people are not watching the rehearsal, all right? We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Give us a call, 646-668-8393. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love for you to chime in. We'd love for you to join the conversation. We appreciate you. And ladies and gentlemen, that's our time. God bless and good night.